Hello and welcome to Media Geek. This is your weekly look at the world of grassroots and independent media, as well as a critical examination of our media environment. My name is Paul Riesmandel, and I'm your host. On today's program, part two of the rise of community radio in India. We started the series last week, and this is the second part. We're going to hear about some of the potential problems with bringing community radio to what is often called the world's largest democracy, as well as hear about some of the restrictions the government of India is placing on community radio. That, and we'll catch up with some great news, or potentially great news, for Low Power FM. Do stay tuned. So on June 21st, two bills were entered into Congress in both the House and the Senate, hoping to restore the full potential of low-power FM radio. This service was first proposed and approved by the Federal Communications Commission back in 2000, but late that same year, Congress put some very significant restrictions on the service, making these very low-power stations have to obey the same spacing requirements as full-power stations, all done at the behest of the large broadcast lobby, the National Association of Broadcasters, which is not interested in seeing more non-commercial community stations on radio dials, especially in congested urban areas. But there have been several attempts over the last few years since 2000 to try and get a bill passed to restore the FCC's original plan for low-power radio. And now House Representatives Mike Doyle and Lee Terry held a national press conference call on June 21st to tell everyone about their bill and why they believe it's important to restore low-power FM community radio.
Today we have introduced legislation that we believe has the potential to revolutionize and improve what Americans hear on their radios. As almost everyone listening in on this call knows, low-power FM radio stations broadcast at a power level that carries only a couple of miles. But despite its limited range, low-power FM radio meets the needs of many potential broadcasters. LPFM offers local communities the opportunity to broadcast music and other programming at a cost they can afford. And it holds the promise to dramatically increase the diversity of programming and political views available over the radio, an important policy goal when many people who are interested in telecommunications policy are concerned about recent media ownership trends. Moreover, LPFM radio has proven to be an important communication and public safety asset in local emergencies like Hurricane Katrina. In short, there are a lot of good reasons for the federal government to promote the expansion of low-power FM radio broadcast. As we all know, here in 2000, the FCC moved ahead with a plan to issue a great many new low-power FM licenses. This initiative would have issued hundreds, possibly thousands, of LPFM radio licenses to schools, churches, and other community-based organizations. Later that year, however, Congress passed legislation that required a minimum of four intervals between radio station transmissions. This requirement effectively limited the number of low-power FM radio stations that could be created across the country. In fact, it only allowed one new LPFM broadcaster in the top 50 media markets across the country. At that time, a number of members of Congress were concerned that LPFM signals would cause interference with existing full-power public and commercial radio stations. That's why they imposed that minimum separation requirement on the FCC's LPFM plan. But Congress also authorized a study in that bill to determine just how much of an interference problem more LPFM stations would cause. That study was completed several years ago, and it concluded that there would be no interference caused by reducing the required separation between new LPFM broadcasts and existing full-power broadcasts to three intervals. But today, hundreds of potential broadcasters are unable to get their programming on the air. Consequently, in the 109th Congress, Senator John McCain and Senator Maria Cantwell introduced legislation that would repeal the current minimum separation requirement of 4 intervals and allow the FCC to proceed with its original plan to issue new LPFM licenses for frequencies on the radio dial that are only 3 intervals away from existing full-power radio stations. But the legislation wasn't enacted into law before the 109th Congress ended. Senators McCain and Cantwell plan to reintroduce their legislation again today as well. Congressman Lee Terry and I have been working with Senators Cantwell and McCain, and we're pleased to announce that today we are introducing identical legislation in the House. In addition, as I mentioned earlier, we believe that the establishment of hundreds of low-power radio stations across the country would also help keep residents better informed during natural disasters and other local emergencies. I hope that our colleagues in the House and the Senate will see the need for this important legislation and rapidly enact it into law. With that, I'd like to yield to my good friend and colleague, Congressman Lee Terry.
The MITRE study was very key in breaking down the barriers that prevented low-power FM. The study was the right thing to do because it really helped define in an engineering way how low-power FM will not interfere with the larger stations, and we were concerned about that in Congress. So now with a solid engineering MITRE study, we can move forward on low-power, and that's why Mike and I are taking the lead.
With that, I'd like to introduce Emily Saliers of the Indigo Girls, who's going to kick off their remarks. They're out west on tour. And we're particularly appreciative of their work on low-power radio because they've been with this issue for a long time, back when we were fighting the fight at the FCC, when we were fighting the first congressional debates back in the year 2000. They've been back on the Hill repeatedly since then. And we really appreciate their leadership and stick-to-itiveness on this issue, and I'll turn it over to Emily.
It's a joy for Amy and me to be working on a nonpartisan issue because, to us, this is really about the airwaves belonging to the American public. And then it's up to Congress and the FCC to make sure that we have as many of these low-power FM radio stations as possible and not limit them to protect the business interests of existing commercial stations. And we've traveled a lot in this country, and we've played in small towns and communities, and we realize what a rich and diverse culture this country embodies. And in times where we're all thinking about how different we are, this is a way to realize the beauty and the differences, and this is a way for communities to express themselves. So we believe in diverse broadcasting, and we believe that it's time to bring back that eclectic, beauty, diverse thing that is America that we all have a chance to be part of, and what makes us such a great country. And as artists, musicians, and travelers, we realize the importance to communities, whether it's a reservation or an urban community or a rural community, to have the voices of the people who live within those communities be heard to their folks and to have people access them even from outside the area. So we're very, very happy to be part of this movement.
And that was Emily Saliers from the Indigo Girls musical group speaking about low-power FM radio. Before that, you heard Congressman Lee Terry, who's a Republican from Nebraska, and it started off with Congressman Mike Doyle, a Democrat from Pennsylvania. Both congressmen are sponsors, primary sponsors of a new bill to help restore low-power FM community radio, potentially allowing hundreds of stations to go on the air. And you can learn more about that at the Media Geek website at MediaGeek.net. And of course, this is Media Geek, the radio show. The radio show's online at radio.mediageek.net. That's where you can download it, subscribe to the podcast. Coming up next, we're going to hear more about the rise of community radio in India. This is the second part of the first program produced in this series by Emmanuel Madan and Jagish Singh from CKUT Radio, 90.3 FM, community radio in Montreal, Canada. And in this part, we'll hear what are some of the potential problems with bringing community radio to India. It's a brand new service just authorized by the Indian government. And we'll also hear about some of the restrictions on community radio stations there. They're a bit different compared to community radio stations in North America.
We're going to continue with this special edition of South Asian Community News, exploring the rise of community radio in India. As some of our guests, our virtual guests that we recorded interviews with earlier, have explained, the rise of community radio in India is full of both challenges and opportunities, but also potential dangers. And some of those dangers and critiques are addressed in this segment. As people, I'm sure, can appreciate, the power of community radio doesn't simply exist to democratize, but it can also exist to mobilize some horrible forces, as we've seen in Rwanda and elsewhere. And in these clips, we our guests explore critically the whole notion of community and whether the notion of community can be equated with NGOs or non-governmental organizations. As we explained earlier, the new licenses can only be given to NGOs that have had at least 3 years of existence in India. So that sort of limits the notion of what is community. And as well, the use of or potential use of community radio by the Hindu right wing. So in this upcoming segment, Biju Satyanath and Stalin K address the notion of community and whether that is equated with NGOs and the Hindu right.
In terms of the field and the kind of problems it could generate, coming back to the resource question, not only is the problem then that lots of mass-based groups with which are very, very resource poor cannot quite get to building their own stations or doing of the stuff, but the fact that the space that's left open, therefore, is something that's going to be grabbed by the richer NGO sector at one end and by the right wing at the other end. So both of those are the, quote-unquote, other end of the stick if the movement base doesn't get hold of the airspace. And I'm not trying to equate the right wing with the NGO sector. That's not my intent. I think they are clearly different. But in terms of what happens with radio, there could be the problem that the richer NGO sector will grab some of the spectrum, the right wing, essentially the Hindu right wing, will grab some or a lot of the spectrum, and that would leave the mass movements high and dry.
The other problem is the way the Hindu fundamentalists are spreading and taking over every space that is available for social discourse, and it's an endless fight just to try to stop these Hindu fundamentalists from spreading hate. And particularly in Bhopal, it is important, which has had a long history of religious harmony, and where repeated attempts have been made by the Hindu right and the Muslim fundamentalist groups, though they are far outnumbered by the Hindu militants, to spread discord. And this could be taken over by groups like this. There is this real fear.
I mean, to be very straight on this question, we are in Gujarat, in a state which is highly polarized, unfortunately, in the lines of religion. We have a very rightist government in place, a very rightist political party in place. And they have all kind of money and the power to set up stations. Now, how do we counter that? The only way we can counter it is that who beats them to the race of the best and the most effective community radio stations. So hopefully there will be more secular, more politically correct organizations who would set up these stations. And we will all be competing with on the airwaves with different ideology, I suppose. And it will only make people like us more creative and more interesting in our challenges to these groups whose agenda is to spread hatred or division in society. So it will be an interesting battle in the skies in a very fun, creative way. You know, I mean, internet is a very good example of that. There is so much hatred and so much divisive things happening on the internet. But at the same time, internet is the most subversive media ever.
So that was Stalin K talking about the battle in the skies. Stalin K, along with Satyanath and Biju, addressing the potential use of community radio in India by the Hindu right. I guess it's worth saying something about Stalin K. His name's Stalin K. People in India won't be surprised because a lot of people in India are named after Russian communist figures. But I guess for the listeners here in Montreal, it's worth mentioning that names like Stalin and Lenin are often used by people on the left who identify with that movement. So we're referring to Stalin K, who's an activist, and that's his name. So Stalin K talked about the battle in the skies, and part of that battle in the skies in India is also over the definition of what is community. As I've mentioned, NGOs who are registered and who have been around for 3 years are the ones who are allowed to apply for community radio licenses. That opens up the scope of who can get licenses, but it's also limiting as well. And that's a potential pitfall of the rise of community radio. And that's something that's addressed both by Stalin K, Asta, and Biju Matthew.
Community radio will be like a big zoo, and there will be all kind of animals playing in it. The other big challenge for us is that at the moment, the community radio policy as it stands now allows only non-profit registered non-profit organizations to apply for licenses. Now, it's a big danger point. I mean, it could easily turn into an NGO radio station if NGOs are not very clear and committed to the concept of community-owned, managed, run, produced radio station. So at the moment, since this the draft has been accepted and put on table, a lot of the energy of the Community Radio Forum, which I'm now the convener of, goes in educating NGOs that there is a tremendous opportunity here to set up radio stations, but do not envisage this as your mouthpiece. You know, design this as a mouthpiece of community. And be ready to hand it over to the community at a certain point. You know, the asset should belong to them. You might invest in it. At some point, the asset should belong to them. It should be operated by them. And, you know, make sure that the editorial board has 60% marginalized communities, 50% across women representing in all the decision-making bodies in the station and stuff like that. So a lot of energy is right now going in educating the potential radio broadcasters, which are all NGOs, pushing this idea of true community radio.
The way I envision, or I would hope that the programming would, because in India so far, they've restricted the programming they've restricted the license to just NGOs or educational centers. When they say NGOs, they mean very, very developmental NGOs, which either work with the child rights or women rights or blah, blah, blah.
Community radio had come into the kind of, and come onto the radar of a bunch of NGOs as well as the right-wing groups, but had not spread into the movement base. And so that's kind of the task that a small group of us gave ourselves over the last 2 years or so, to kind of at least get the word out about community radio into this space so that they could get active also.
We're focusing on the rise of community radio in India. We've heard about the issue in general, but I thought Em and I now we could talk about a bit these policy guidelines, how to actually go about getting a radio station in India. In the next months, there might be literally hundreds, if not thousands, according to the Ministry of Information and Broadcast in India. There could be as many as 4,000 stations emerging in the next couple of years. But as our guests that we've heard from before have already talked about, there are a lot of potential problems. Reading through the guidelines, I guess they're relatively simple, but they have some interesting provisos. For example, it is forbidden to contain criticism of friendly countries. I'm not sure if Canada is considered a friendly country. If it is, feel free to criticize Canada, friends in India, because there's a lot to criticize. As well, another stipulation which is interesting is that the license holder, if they get a license for community radio, can't broadcast any programs which relate to news and current affairs and are otherwise political in nature. So it's hard to say, what is political or what isn't political. There are other barriers as well. It costs upwards of 25,000 rupees, which is about $600. But in India, that is a lot of money to actually get a license. The ministry is sort of pushing people to get their equipment from their authorized dealers, which are charging exorbitant sums of money. Of course, there's the official way of getting onto radio, but one thing we haven't looked at, and we will at future editions of looking at community radio in India, are people who circumvent the whole licensing process and are circumventing the whole licensing process and setting up their own village transmitters, etc. One famous such station is in Bihar. The person who operates it is a young man by the name of Raghav Mahautau. He operates in a dialect called Bhojpur in Bihar, and he's called the Amitabh Bachchan of the community radio movement in India. Anyways, as you can tell, there are a lot of pitfalls, bureaucracy to go through. There is an opening, but potential problems with it. And we're going to go now to some clips from Biju, Stalinke, Ashish, and Asta talking about this prohibition on news, current affairs, and other programming that is otherwise political in nature for community radio broadcasters in India.
See, the point is very simple. I mean, it's a regulation that one it was a caveat that one was anticipating all the way through. One knew that the government would find it very difficult to pass the regulation without that, simply because they knew that the government would actually run into conflict at two ends. One, at the end of the fact that they would be opening up this political spectrum in a particular way that at least formally they wouldn't want to open up. And second, they would be running into commercial interest, because news is the biggest moneymaker on Indian media right now. Every news channel has got an abundance of advertising. So, you know, there's a market pressure that says don't hand over news to anybody else. It's part of the politics of the country, where news is like everything. So in that sense, we are anticipating that those caveats would be in place. But at least the groups that I have been working with, the response has been quite uniform, that they just plan to ignore it and take it up as a political battle as it comes along. When I say they'll ignore it, it's not that they'll have a regular news broadcast. They see that as not necessarily strategic. So simply start and say, okay, we're going to have a regular news broadcast. But they are what the plan essentially will be is to cover everything that you want to cover in terms of current affairs, politics, etc., under the rubric of a lot of categories that are there in that very same regulation as things that are allowed. So, for instance, development, education, all of these are broad categories that are there in the regulation as subjects that can be covered. And so to use any of those and do anything and everything that you want to do.
Very honestly, I am not bothered about that little word in the policy document. I'm not. I'm more concerned about them not allowing news and current affairs. But if as a producer, as a broadcaster, I have very creative ways of getting past both those restrictions and doing exactly news and exactly current affairs and exactly content of political nature without them ever catching me.
Absolutely right. You know, one issue is the prohibition on broadcasting news, and clearly this is something that we are not comfortable with. And this is, you know, argued on several levels. I mean, for what is news, and, you know, and what is political news? I think at the community level, the marriage of, as someone said, the marriage of my sister may constitute news, and why should I ban not be allowed to disseminate that? And I think the government has actually taken note of this. They've actually, I mean, on paper, they've said that, you know, freedom of expression can't be stopped by the whims of a pen, and the Joint Secretary of the INB Department did say that he believes that we will hopefully be in a situation where we would be able to broadcast news.
I'm really not sure if this is going to take off, because I've read through the programming that the government expects, and what they expect is, like I said, very strangely, let's make this world a better place NGOs. Now, because they've started giving out the license, their antenna is up. They're going to start scrutinizing everybody who takes the license. More so, Coach would be under the scrutiny, because Coach invites a lot of the artists from Southeast Asia and a lot from Pakistan. And that, you know, is a very touchy topic here. So before I burn my fingers, I just want to be really cautious about this. And I hope that it takes off, because I really see it as tangible, strong, solid project.
So it almost sounds like the new regulatory context that was announced in November is actually almost more hampering your project than encouraging it, because all of a sudden it's almost like a bureaucratization of community radio. Would you say that that's true?
Sort of, because I did attend the conference, and all the programming that was spoken about did not at any angle include either experimental sound or just dialogue. It was more about, better facilities for the farmer, or letting them know about this and letting them know about that, or tsunami warnings and stuff like that. So in an urban context for a migrant colony, it has very strange rules. One of them, which goes on to say that the programming cannot include making fun of countries that are friendly towards India. Now, that's really vague. And it has things like the content should not discuss current affairs, but discuss affairs that pertain to the community. Now, it's really squiggled. Somebody who had no idea of what is going on wrote this proposal, obviously.
Some of the people that work with and collaborate in your lane, some of the people that you see as potentially interested in participating on this project, if they had to write this policy, how do you think they would write it, or how would you write it if you had the opportunity of just writing your own policy for your radio station?
Oh, that'd be great. That'd be great, because every little corner of this country, because it's so big, has its own problematics and its own possibilities. And really, if everybody got to do that, it would turn out to be a much better project. But I think the autonomy that it would give people is something that would scare a lot of people in authorities.
So that just about wraps it up for this edition of South Asian Community News, a special program on the rise of community radio in India. This show is far from the final word about community radio in India. It's far from even the first word, but we hope we've contributed to an understanding of the rise of community radio in India. To those community radio activists all over India who are fighting to democratize their airwaves and struggling for social justice, we'll be listening when we can, and we're inspired by your efforts.
And thank you very much to Jaggi and Emmanuel from CKUT in Montreal, Canada, 90.3 FM, for allowing me to excerpt these two portions of the rise of community radio in India. That brings to a close another edition of Media Geek. I'm host and producer Paul Riesmandel. I'll be back in 1 week with another half-hour look at independent and grassroots media, as well as a critical examination of our media environment. In the meantime, check out the frequently updated Media Geek blog at MediaGeek.net. The program can also be downloaded at radio.MediaGeek.net, where you can subscribe to the podcast. Media Geek is produced at Community Radio WEFT in Champaign, Illinois, and is heard on 10 other community stations around North America, including KRFP in Moscow, Idaho, KQRP in Salida, California, KRBS in Oroville, California, WSLR in Sarasota, Florida, WTND Macomb, Illinois, WRFA in Jamestown, New York, CKDU in Halifax, Nova Scotia, WYQZ in Warrenton-Bealeton, Virginia, KWMD Kasilov in Anchorage, Alaska, WVEW in Brattleboro, Vermont, and Free Radio Olympia in Olympia, Washington. It's also on the web at Free Radio San Diego, Pirate969.org, and RadioDriftless.org. Media Geek is free to air on your local non-commercial station, too. Just email Paul at MediaGeek.net. That's also where you can send comments about the program, Paul at MediaGeek.net. Thanks for tuning in.